I'm 24.
24 years old. And how many units do you own?
About to be about 396.
Welcome to the Action Academy Podcast.
Stand back while I celebrate freedom.
The show where we help you achieve financial independence with the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who've already earned their freedom.
The flags of freedom fly. Freedom fly.
Choose to do what you want.
What you want.
With who you want.
With who you want.
When you want.
When you want.
With another episode today. Now, here's your host, Brian Lubin.
Donato Callahan, what's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
Doing good, man. You have just been doing this for decades, and you had 5 to 10 years of analysis paralysis until you finally did your first deal. Oh, wait a second. Hold on. How old are you?
I'm 24.
24 years old. And how many units do you own?
About to be about 396.
All right. So you don't necessarily need to spend a decade to acquire these properties, man. I am excited to talk about you because I always find it interesting whenever people are able to do things in an accelerated way that is not dangerous, because there's some people that do the get rich quick things. And then there's other people that it's not a get rich quick, but it's a level jump. That's what I call it, to where instead of doing the stack method, like we traditionally learn about, where you buy a house, then 2 houses, then 4 houses, then 8 the next year, you can simply just go to the people buying 400 and just do that year. So I'm excited to hear about you and your story and your journey. I'll read out a super quick, you have a graphic on your website that I really like, and I want to read it out like really briefly, and then I'll allow you to introduce yourself. But this is just so interesting to me. So you volunteered in South Africa. So in 2019, 2020, you started your first real estate company. So this wasn't I bought a bunch of cheap real estate in 2010. Like, you started your company in COVID in 2020. Then you launched your first multifamily investing company, launched Bright Investor, which we'll get into, in 2021. 2022, you bought a fourplex. Then you shut down your real estate company and then started doing multifamily. And then between 2021 and 2022, you bought $15 million in commercial real estate. Then you scaled your company to 1,000 users, quit your job, and now you're wheeling, dealing, and a multifamily investor through and through, man. So walk me through. Who the heck is Donato Callahan, man? Like, this is a crazy 4 years.
Yeah, my life has completely changed in 4 years, almost like to the date, man. 4 years ago, right now, I was in senior year college, getting the text message all online for the rest of the semester. Life completely changed. So it's been an absolute whirlwind. And I can really boil it down to being completely disillusioned with the traditional way that we handle retirement in this country. January 2020. I've been saving up money through college because I won this big scholarship. It was paying for me to go to school, and I had this cash set aside, and my family was like, you got to go put this in the stock market. That's what we did. That's what my grandparents did. That's what you got to do. Like, great. So I dropped like $25,000 in the stock market, and within 2 months, I'm up like $10,000 because the one stock that I picked after my 2 weeks of research was NVIDIA back in 2020. Now, I don't still have it. I sold out of it on its last peak, but that's my one and only successful deal in the stock market. I got lucky there. But I put my money in. It's going high. I'm like, this is great. I'm not doing anything and I'm making money. And then March hits and I lose half of it overnight. Half of my money just instantly gone. And I have quickly realized there has to be a better way because this sucks. Like, what if I work 30 more years and all of a sudden my portfolio is at $3 or $4 million and I lose half of it overnight? That's a game changer. So that's what got me into real estate and start looking at how can I turn my expertise and my time into skills that allow me to build assets that'll pay me multiple times that isn't reliant on anybody else. And that's the whole journey.
Yeah. So the first pivot point that I want to hit on from what we just covered is you starting your first real estate company and then you buying that first fourplex and then the pivot into doing larger deals. So we'll get into Bright Investor, what that is, like the SaaS side of things in a little bit, because that's another vertical and another company for you. But we'll stick with the real estate to begin. what was the pivot point between you buying the single family or buying the fourplex, the residential kind of, and then transitioning from that into a larger deal?
Yeah. So when I was going in that senior year, the first thing that I learned about in real estate was wholesaling. And the first reaction I had to it was, I don't want to do that. It doesn't sound like the right methodology, but I didn't know enough and I was naive. And I said, why not? Let's just try it. So I got into a paid mentorship group. I was buying the softwares. I was paying for direct mail. I was doing the calling, the texting, and I was doing that the entire senior year of college. At the same time, I got myself a job as a maintenance coordinator for a property management company so I could learn how to inspect buildings. And then whenever a local agent, whenever they'd sell a house, they'd call me to help them move their clients in because college kids are cheaper than moving companies. And so I got to get a really good relationship with the agents who'd give me MLS access. So I was doing that for about 8 or 9 months, and I realized that through the wholesaling venture, it can be profitable. There's a lot of people that do it well. But as soon as I sell the property, I never get paid again. Mm-hmm. I have to continually do another deal and another deal when it attacks pretty heavily on those proceeds. And it's not necessarily the kind of thing I can do once and reap the benefits for forever, unless I build a very large organization, at which point I'm still getting paid once per deal. So that was the shift for me, that pivot, that I want to buy something that pays me multiple times. So minimize the work I have to do in the future. And so a big component of my success is that I've talked to people. And I say this all the time. Recently, I was at Penn State University talking to the students out there. The number one piece of advice I gave them was to talk to 10 people who've been doing what you want to do for 10 years. So that when you start, you have 100 years of wisdom right out the gate. And so all the people that were talking to me said, you should do house hacking. That's what I wish I would have done going back 20 years. So I said, great, I'll do that. So I learned how to analyze properties, analyzed 65 deals, called an agent and where I knew I was going to be moving to in St. Louis, said, I'm still in college. I have no job, but I'm going to buy a property from you. Just work for me for the next 6 months. And he said, okay. And eventually I graduated school. And I decide, hey, I'm going to find this property. Something comes up on a Friday night, 5 o'clock. I'm living with my parents after graduating school. And I'm like, this is the property for me. It makes so much sense. Within 24 hours, I've got my offer sent. And on the day of my 22nd birthday, I rolled out of bed, grabbed a muffin, and I went to the closing table and I bought my fourplex for $270,000 in St. Louis at 2.375 interest rate on the day of my 22nd birthday. It got me into my first truly passive investment.
Dude, that's so huge. And it was a similar story for me. So I was just saving up money. I was in the corporate job. I bought my first house hack, the same thing, where it's a difference between a huge thing that you just said that I want to pull out is you were disillusioned for success. Like you, some people have this programming of years or decades of being told this is how you do things. And then they have to unwind that program and redo that programming. But then sometimes you have the person that's just, why wouldn't I just do this? And that's how you're cut, where you're just like, why don't I just go do this? Like, why wouldn't I just go buy a fourplex for my first deal? Let's go ahead. And then you buy it. So then what happens next to stop you from going down the traditional path of, okay, now next year I will buy 8. The next year I will buy 16. What happened next to make you go bigger and do what, like $15 million in acquisition in 2021?
Yeah. So what happened next was I bought this property. I was living for free. So I was able to buy it, got creative, actually had my old college roommate come and rent one of the other bedrooms in my unit from me. So I was getting 4 units of cash flow out of 4 units while still living there for free. So we did that. And over the course of my last semester in college, I was looking into multifamily because the same people who had told me about house hacking said, have you thought about commercial multifamily? And I said, I don't know, but why not? Let's find out. So that's where the storyline gets a little convoluted because I was graduating school, shutting down my wholesaling company, trying to buy my fourplex. And at the same time, I made an offer on a 96-unit building in St. Louis that I had no business buying. I knew nothing. I got 2 partners and was going to investigate this property to syndicate it and take it down. So that when I graduated college, I road tripped back to Iowa over 3 days, got home at 11 o'clock at night. And at 4 a.m. the next morning, I was in the car driving to St. Louis to meet the contractors I'd hired to inspect the building. Now, as that property progressed, ended up not working out. But as we got to August of 2021, my old landlord back in college said, hey, I know you just got some experience in the multifamily space. We've talked over the last year about our joint ventures in real estate, and I'm joining a paid mastermind to learn how to do commercial multifamily. Do you want to join me? And I said, why not? So we joined her and we put together a 6-person team and looked at maybe 95 deals in 3 months, just crushing it over and over again. Until we found a very experienced group of sponsors in the commercial multifamily space. And we said, we want to work with you. You have a great reputation. What do you hate doing? Oh, we hate doing the deal acquisition and market research. And I said, great, I'll do that so you don't have to. So I built the team around us doing all the stuff that they hated doing. And then we just kept knocking on their door when we found a deal that worked for them. And then they'd say, okay, no, leave us alone. That's great. Go away, get another one, say this one works even better. They'd say, find one that has these things too. We'd say, great, go away, we'll come back and do better. And a third or fourth time, they said, clearly, you guys aren't going away. We'll pay attention to you. And that is with the first people that we worked with to buy a 172-unit building in Waco, Texas for about $15.5 million in the summer of 2022.
Hot damn. Dude, couple things from that. I freaking love everything that you just said there. And that's another reason that I wholeheartedly believe like we do something like that, but there's also so many other resources and so many different groups and stuff. This is what you just said is why I try to steer people and why I think online courses are going to fade into oblivion, and more so like the community and the people aspect will take off in the next 5 to 10 years, because you being around those people got you in the mindset where you're like, well, you guys are doing it, I can do it. You're like, why couldn't I do this? And then that's where you started forming your partnerships. Were there any hangups? Were there any friction points between you at the beginning of that versus you getting that first 96 unit where you guys were underwriting where it didn't work out? Walk us through some limiting beliefs you had to overcome, some ideas that you were telling yourself that weren't true. What was the emotional process, the mental process going through this to where you were able to convince yourself, hey, I'm going to overcome this and I'm going to get one of these bad boys down?
Yeah. So one of the limiting beliefs side, and in tune with the retirement aspect, I just had this epiphany that was, any retirement plan that is tied to your age is inherently not for your benefit. If you cannot do what you want to do until a certain age, the entire structure is designed to profit for the person who's employing you to extract as many workable years as possible. And I don't like to look at myself as a thing that people extract workable years from. In fact, I'd like to go and do my own thing. So that was the first limiting belief I had to overcome and realize that whole system is not for me. The second thing I had to look at was, you have to have a team. I physically cannot do everything. I do not know everything. And no matter how many hours I was working, because it was a lot of work, between 2021 and most of 2023, I averaged like 16 to 18 hours a day and was getting not a lot of sleep, absolutely burning myself to the core. And it was through the building of the teams for people who not only could do other things than me, but were better than me at those things that allowed me to get to where I am. And then third, realizing that so much of business is just introducing yourself to people, doing what you say you're going to do, and having the relationship with them, so that over the course of time, and I was working with these sponsors and they were telling me, no, it's not for us. It's not for us. And eventually that became, you're not going away. You keep showing up. Those same people, the end of this week, I'm flying to their wedding renewal, their vow renewal in Tucson, Arizona. I'm best friends with their sons who are my age. I've got a custom t-shirt with their faces on it. They're friends of mine now. And when I needed money to go to raise for my startup, my SaaS startup, they were some of the first people who said, here's a 6-figure check. We believe in you, not the company. We believe in you. And whatever you need, we're going to help you do it. And so it was through the community and the network that I completely built my life today, all based on the foundation of why the hell not.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the importance of calling your shot before you shoot it. So in the context of this specific example, just to clarify the question a little bit, how you said over and over again, like, this is what I am doing, before you did it, You didn't just work in silence and network quietly to try to figure out how to buy this 176 unit. You said, come hell or high water, I'm getting this done. Who is going to help me do this? Talk about the importance of that.
It's all about consistency. A lot of the people that are in business, you see who people who are more experienced in the industry have no problem talking about their secrets, what they're doing and how they're doing it, because they know no one's going to follow up. No one's going to actually go take the shot and do the work. And so for us, if I can show up and say, hey, I'm going to make this thing happen with this team and we're going to work at it. And I keep telling people and I keep knocking on those doors and I keep telling them, this is what I'm doing. This is where we're going. And they give me feedback. And then I go and I take action based on their feedback. And I'm being vocal about what it is that we're going to be doing and that I'm dedicating myself to what you need so that I can provide value to you. That consistency shows up that this is someone who can be relied upon. And it just continues to pay dividends when something goes wrong and you still show up. Because we had a deal that we were working on together. It didn't end up panning out. We owed some money to pay some of the vendors we were working with, the attorney's fees and the other financial setup costs that you have in getting a deal done. And I was one of the only people that cut them a check to owe that to pay off what my portion was. Other people had to go and work out different situations. Some people didn't necessarily want to pay up front. I was one of the few people that was there with a check in hand saying, we lost, it sucks, but here you go. And when I went to visit them just a couple of weeks after that event, one of them reached over to me as we're sitting on the campfire and said, you showed up. You didn't back down even when the going got tough. And so just being consistent enough to showcase that you're going to be there and do the things that they need, and you're not going to run away when the going gets tough, builds so much trust that they know I'd do anything for them, they do anything for me, and they're people I'm going to take with me in whatever venture I do.
Dude, I love everything about that, because that's where integrity is. What are you doing when people aren't watching? What are you doing when the spotlight isn't on? What are you doing when the curtains come down and shit hits the fan and you get punched in the face? Like, how well can you take it? And another thing that you did that I really love is you didn't just say, hey, how can I provide value to you? Like, you figured it out and then you went and you hammered on it. You said, okay, you don't like underwriting. You don't like finding the deals. I'm going to do everything I can to find the freaking deal. I don't care. I'm going to do what I need to do, get it done, and then ride off into the freaking sunset. So I absolutely love that. You went to play in a team sport. You did the proper actions that warranted and resulted in what you had. So 176 units. What happens next after this, man? Because that is freaking awesome.
Yeah. So you're doing the fourplex. You're getting into the larger stuff. And I'm just realizing, if I can buy multi units on the residential side, but I'm going to be limited by how much I can't necessarily syndicate a 4-unit building. I'm going to be limited by 10 agency loans or 10 conventional loans eventually in my name until I get more DSCR stuff. And I have to do a lot of the work myself, because that isn't necessarily a huge margin to have 5 people all trying to buy me a rental property. Mm-hmm. So what if I just take the same methodology of buying multiple units and 10x that? What if I just buy more bigger stuff? And as I was talking to investors and they're saying, okay, I started off in the flip wholesaling space, then I flipped, then I did the small multis, then I got into some of the larger multis, now I do self-storage or big syndications or FUDs, or there's a clear track record. And the thing is, there's somebody over there on the other side of 20 years experience who is willing to tell me everything they know as long as I show interest and I take action. So let's just jump over those 20 years and start doing the big stuff.
Here's a question I had.
Deal. You close. Yeah.
Go on. Sorry.
Oh, so doing that big deal and I'm learning more about it and we're working on the next deal. The next deal doesn't quite work out. And that's when I'm going on to other podcasts and trying to network with people, try to learn more about the community, develop my skills in the market research space, which is where I specialize and where Bright Investor came around from. And that is when I got on a podcast with a major operator in the space who I was able to fly down and be on his podcast. And he asked me the same questions. What is it that you do? Why are you at the level that you are? What is it that you're doing that other people aren't? And I was able to be honest with him about, I just work a lot and I ask questions and I keep showing up. And so the next day he offered me a position to say, come work with me, come do multifamily deals with me. And I'm proud to announce that as of this recording, next month, we're closing our next 200 unit deal. And I'm working on 2 more deals that are 165 units and 132 units. So I'm hoping we can close around $60 million this year. And just from showing up and saying, why not?
So a question that I have is, how did you structure the equity and cash flow splits for that 175 units? So the issue is, for people that are listening that are maybe like, cause our thing is we help people like replace corporate with cash flow. So it's very top of mind. The first thing that people are looking for is the cash flow before the equity. So there's so many different ways to structure a multifamily deal with your partnerships, with your operating agreements. So how were you thinking about things with that first deal? Were you trying, what were you optimizing for? Did you just want a piece of the pie? Did you negotiate cash flow and let the other investors take advantage of the tax benefits? What were you optimizing for?
So for the first deal, I was optimizing for experience, a piece of the acquisition fee, and the depreciation. So okay. In that syndication split, it was a 70-30 split between limited partners and general partners. And on the general partner side, 50% of the GP went to the sponsors. So people who are bringing the balance sheet, the SREO, and the track record for the banks to lend to us. 30% went to capital and whoever and the folks that were coming in and committing capital to the deal. And then 20% went to us as a acquisition team. So my six-person team that was all working at finding the deal. So I got 20% of that 20%. So to be clear, my first deal was 20% of 20% of 30% of 15.5. Yeah. And when we closed, I got a check for over $35,000. So that 20% of 20% of 30% was over $35,000. And through the piece of depreciation I got, it was tax-free. And so I got this check. I got all this experience. I'm getting it tax-free. And now as I go into my further deals, we're buying assets that look really good cash flow long-term wise. I got one in Ohio I'm working on it right now. And this structure is I have more of the GP. We're buying these deals that we can do a renovation plan on, hold them for 5 to 7 years, but they do so well that we can refinance out, pay out 100% of our owed capital to our investors, give them a fantastic return, and then give them an infinite return as we own the asset for the next 10 or 20 years with this, and our team, our operating team gets that cash flow to us. So now my day-to-day work is finding deals that pay me cash flow over and over again in bigger deals. And I only have to do the one part of the puzzle that I'm good at while the rest of my team does the stuff that they're good at.
I love that you say that and you're honest about that, because that's the reality for most. Is it's like one of my buddies, Mike Taravella, who you may actually know in the space. He's big in multifamily. So he's, I own a bathroom in Boise. Because it's the truth. Because he's one of the co-GPs that's coordinating the deal. But you take a sliver. But you were just like, dude, get me in the deal. Get me experience. I just want to pay down this debt to ignorance. I want to learn. And then I'll optimize for cash flow on the back end. Now that I've got some balance sheet and track record, now it's just a snowball. So now I've got a very specific niche question for this next one, because it's what we're seeing with a lot of folks that are buying multifamily in our squad right now and in the market in general. A lot of turbulence, a lot of issues. And now I'm doing the math, and you guys buying in 2021 or 2022, all these are mostly bought on bridge loans for 3 to 5 years. And a lot of people are now having issues. Even like some of the largest, I'm sure even the guy that you're with, everyone has got problems in some areas. And it's maybe because they increased the NOI, they did what they were supposed to do.
Yes.
However, the interest rates have now increased so much that you're not able and capable of refinancing. So I'm curious how you guys are handling that, especially as operators that just purchased this like in the last couple of years. And that reality is coming up on y'all.
Absolutely. So the first thing is that we're buying on an agency right now. Both that properties that we're doing are on agency. We're continuing to buy agency. We have not completely written off bridge debt or floating rate debt. But for us, if we're going to take a floating rate debt where interest rates are, 7, 8, even 9% on the bridge side, there has to be a clear cut path to getting to refinance into agency debt within 12 to 18 months. So right now, that does not exist for what we found. So we're doing everything on agency, and we're doing a lot of loan assumptions currently. So we'll take a loan assumption and we'll raise anywhere from 45 to 55% of the equity on these deals from our investors. Go ahead.
Can you elaborate about what the difference is between bridge and agency debt?
Yeah. So agency debt is basically government-backed Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that is the most, like you're buying treasuries or bonds, right? It's the most stringent, strict deadlines and requirements and what kind of properties meet their criteria. But it's also your long-term fixed rate amortizing over 30 years or so debt that allows you to have no volatility in your interest rates. Bridge debt is where it comes to the word bridge, is basically it's meant to bridge you to get over the situation where the property is not currently agency fundable. And you take this short-term loan that is higher of interest rate and it's floating. But the whole point is that you use that to get to
an the agency.
So what a lot of people did in 2019, 2020, 2021, when properties were interest rates are super low, bridge rate makes more sense than agency. Rent growth is skyrocketing. Everyone and their grandmother is making money. They put all these properties on bridge debt with the assumption that, oh, we'll refinance out in 3 or 4 years. What's the big deal? And now they're completely screwed. That, and I have a lot of examples about this. I was just looking at a deal in San Antonio. Huge operator. I'm talking, they went from 15,000.
I think I know the same exact deal.
You might know it. Okay.
They went from
15,000 units to 30,000 units nationwide in 20.
Now defaulting.
Yep. And those people, they bought it for over 30, I think around 35 million. They poured like 5 million into it. And now they're selling it for sub 30 because they have to. I get deals like this across my desk every single day. That's what I'm doing. I'm sourcing deals and I'm doing market research. And I have deals daily. Oh, this bank, they just completely rewrote their loan documents to allow their borrower to use their capital expense reserves to pay off their new property tax bill because it came in too high. And the bank doesn't want to take it back. So they're literally rewriting the rules so they don't have to take these properties back. There's properties that are having huge issues with the fact their rent growths are too low. They're out of money. Their rate cap is expiring. It's for people who went in, and to be very specific, made very aggressive, fast and loose underwriting based on a temporary financial policy. Those people are losing their ass.
Yeah. And so for our folks, it's like a lot of them came into the game this last year and they were really upset. Because they're like, I'm so excited to start doing this acquisition stuff. Like, I'm really pumped to get going. And they couldn't find a freaking deal because every operator is asking for 2 year ago prices.
Yep.
And so now it's getting to a point where it's like starting to catch up. And I was like, this is actually a really interesting time to enter the multifamily space going into these next couple of years because of the distress. And it's, you don't want to, while that is true, what we just said, it is also true that there are, and some of them are my buddies. There are also good operators that did the stuff that they were supposed to do. They stabilized the property. They rehabbed the units in a very affordable and reasonable time frame. Like they raised the rent. Everything was good until the interest rates. And now they're just like, shit. So what's maybe some advice that you could give for somebody in that situation that may be going through that, that maybe try to do things the right way, and maybe they have a smaller multi or a multi y'all size, and they're like, dude, I'm trying to figure out what the hell to do. Yeah. I don't know. Do you have any advice for that person maybe?
100% I do. First off, submit the lower offer. Even in today's marketplace, right? I have a property that we're putting an offer on is $100,000 a door. And 3 miles away is a property that was quoted $100,000 a door that we're going to put in for $85,000 a door. So we're routinely making offers 10 to 20% underneath what they're asking us for because we have a cost of capital. As an investor, as an operator, you have a duty not only to your tenants, but to the people who are committing money to you. Because that's their pensions, that's their retirement funds, that's their next house, that's their kids' college education. You owe it to them to be as truthful and conservative as you can be while still getting deals done. So we go and we write these offers. We're telling the brokers, for our cost of capital, based off actual quotes and how things are really expensing today, this is what we can afford. We're not going to be your highest, but we are going to be dedicated, most reliable buyers. If you want to put this in your back pocket, go ahead. Something happens, call us. And we have people who 4 months later will say, hey, is that offer still good? Because that's the name of the game. They want to see you put some offers out, even if it's not the highest. Second thing, make sure that whatever market you're underwriting at or whatever property that you're looking at, what's happening on the ground? Is there development coming online? Is the rent growth consistent? What is the income of the local area? And make sure that the people that you're going to be renting to the plan that you're planning to execute makes sense for not what's happening right now, but also what's coming to the market in a few years. Because if you're going to be looking at buying a deal based off today's information, you saw what happened in 2020, 2021. You got to buy based off what's going to happen tomorrow. So I would take those two things and really advocate for new investors. Make the lower offers, show up, be consistent, consistently exposing yourself to people who have these deals to list. And in doing so, partner with people who know more and have more than you. Do not go into these deals expecting to make $1 million check your first one. Because if you do make $1 million check your first one, one, call me. I want to know what you're buying. Second, something like I'm willing to bet something in that deal did not end up going the way you needed it to go, or $1 million checks just don't typically happen or off your first deal in today's marketplace. So partner with the people that lowers the risk and get more guarantees of success, even if it means a lower amount of money in your bank.
I like that. So a little, it's a buddy of mine, Christian Osgood. I don't know if you've met him yet, but he does multifamily as well. He's got about 300 doors. He says, pay now, play later, or play now, pay later. So it's like, you get to choose. Absolutely. So it's a little bit about that delayed gratification. So in closing, over the next 3 to 5 years, pull out your crystal ball that's rolling around, right? What are you guys seeing as the opportunity moving forward with your acquisition strategy? Is there anything specifically that you're targeting? And also on the flip side, anything specifically you're staying away from?
Yeah, so we are staying away from a lot of coastal markets, so including things like Houston, where
insurance
becomes too high to make. Yeah, insurance primarily. Coastal markets are a no for us. We're also staying out of the primary markets like Dallas and Austin. So I prefer secondary and tertiary markets in Texas and in Midwestern cities, Indianapolis, Ohio, even some spots still in Georgia and Tennessee. And I'm looking at those particularly because the population growth and the job growth is still positive. The rent growth is still going in the right direction, but we also have less risk on the insurance side, less expenses on the renovation side, and we're getting into deals where the structurals make sense. So it means we're not necessarily buying 70s deals anymore. Now I want 90s deals. I want things that are stable, that have big floor plans. And something that not a lot of people talk about is that I want to buy deals with 2 or 3 bedrooms. Because a 2-bedroom apartment, you can live in that when you graduate college, you have the roommate. You can live in that 2-bedroom apartment once you are working from home and you've got yourself a home office. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have a spouse move in. Maybe you have your first kid. And that 2-bedroom apartment can have one tenant in it for potentially 20 years of their life and still serve them well, which reduces turnover and gives long-term tenancy that makes our operation look really well. So targeting assets that can serve people across their entire life is a big benefit in what we're focusing on.
Dude, that's huge. So tertiary markets, two units. What about three-bed units? Do you guys care as much about those or more so optimizing for two?
I generally optimize for two. So my rule of thumb is if I can, my perfect deal has 50% of the units are 2-bedroom, 2-baths over 800 square feet. That's my perfect. Ideally, it wouldn't have any studios. And in fact, it would have maybe 10 to 15% 3-bedrooms. With a 2-bedroom, 2-baths, that's my sweet spot. That's really where I want to be when I'm buying my deals.
Perfect. Sweet brother, where can people find out more about you, what you do, and then also give a pitch for Bright Investor, because we didn't have enough time to get into that. But then where can people find it? What is it? All that good stuff.
Yeah. So over the process that I was asking people, what do you hate doing? They're saying deal sourcing, market research. I started doing that and then realized how much it sucked and how hard it was and doing it for every deal. And there's all these data and all these sources and all these subscriptions you have to pay for. So I created a company to fix that problem, and that's Bright Investor. So we're the number one platform for real estate market research. Agents use us, developers use us, commercial multifamily investors use us, wholesalers use us, because we have market data like crime stats, appreciation rates, job growth, and even MLS access to properties on this platform. So you can go find the best areas and then find the best deals. And in the next couple months, stay tuned, we're adding our brand new market comparison tool. So you can tell it to go find markets for you, and it'll look up markets and help you create content for your brand, for your clients, all in the same place, with some massive upgrades coming in June to include instant insurance quotes, loan quotes, sales comps, skip tracing. Basically, if you're using anything else for real estate, it doesn't make sense. You're going to be wasting money and time. So we built that product over the last couple of years. You can find us at brightinvestor.com, and you can find me on social media at Donato_Callahan and my website, DonatoCallahan.com.
Hey guys, we will have all of those in the show description. And as a reminder, it's Donato. That is one T, guys. Dude, Donato, man, you crushed it. Thank you so much for coming on. Everybody check out Bright Investor. Go follow Donato on Instagram. Dude, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, and I appreciate it.
This has been Donato and Brian with the Action Academy Podcast, signing off. Hey, real quick, if you're still listening to today's episode, I'm assuming you got value from it, so I need your help specifically. My 2-year vision with this show is to help over 1 million people do what they want, when they want, with who they want, and I can only do that with your help. There are two main ways that a podcast grows. One is through ratings and reviews, and the other is word of mouth. If you could please leave me a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as send this to one or two friends that you think would get value from it, we can reach the people that we're looking to reach. Thanks in advance. Talk tomorrow.